Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Academy Award winning documentarian Brian Fogel's going to join us. He did Icarus, as you guys know, won the Academy Award in 2018. Also, news coming up as well for a very informative chat.
Adam Carolla's I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, navigating our all woke, no joke culture, has over 1,000 five-star reviews on Amazon. Here's one.
Another hilarious critical. I insume for taking the star, the old culture for Adam, 5-star.
Thanks, Ozzy. Pick up I'm Your Emotional Support Animal now. Available in all formats. For more, go to adamcarolla.com.
Brian Fogel is joining us. The Dissident is the name of the latest docs, available now on Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, and Video on Demand. And, of course, you know him best from Icarus, the Academy Award-winning doc. So congratulations on both docs, by the way. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Adam. Good to be talking to you.
The latest, and I'll get Jamal Khashoggi to fight. Did I say that right?
Khashoggi?
In the documentary, they pronounce
Jamal,
it differently.
Jamal Khashoggi.
Khashoggi, right? Yeah. So it's a story that most people heard of in the news a couple of years back. He was a journalist, went to the, I don't know, was he a Saudi embassy and was, I don't know, never seen again and then dismembered? I think it's how most people kind of remember the story. But what attracted you to the story?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jamal at the time of his murder was a Washington Post journalist. He had self-exiled himself from Saudi a year earlier, walked into the Saudi consulate in Istanbul on October 2nd, 2018. His fiance, Hatice Cengiz, was waiting outside for marriage papers, for wedding documents. And he never emerged. And as we came to learn over those next couple weeks, he was in fact murdered and dismembered, inside of that consulate, essentially for, dissenting against, Mohammed bin Salman's, policies, weighing in a different opinion, especially his writings in the Washington Post. And as you see in the film, his activity on Twitter. So essentially, this, you know, journalist who was moderate was murdered by the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia for voicing an opinion that didn't align with the Crown Prince's.
Brian, I'm glad you said moderate because I watched the documentary. I loved it. It's very powerful. The thing that jumped out to me, and I wasn't familiar with the details of the backstory, was Jamal wasn't like – he wasn't like personally insulting MBS, saying like he, you know, molest children or like attacking him personally or really crossing any line. He had a point of view, a political point of view, went against MBS, but it wasn't what you'd say was worth dying for or worth being killed over, I guess.
It wasn't incendiary.
Moderate.
Yeah.
Well, that is what really kind of initially drew me into the story. The idea that we're in a world where not only do we take our freedom of press and freedom of speech freedom of opinion for granted, that literally simply voicing an opinion is enough to get you murdered. I mean, you know, you look at what's going on in Russia right now with Navalny. You look at, you know, what just transpired in our own country over the last few years. And, you know, here in the case of Jamal, this guy was 60 years old. He had worked for the Saudi royal family for most of his life, essentially, you know, trying to help them navigate in Washington and in the UK by writing pro-Saudi opinion pieces and policy pieces. As Mohammed bin Salman takes power, all of a sudden there is a complete crackdown on any free speech. Jamal's threatened. Many of his friends also were journalists or arrested. We get into this in the film, and he flees the country, takes a position at the Washington Post, and he was not writing cruelly of the Crown Prince. He was simply saying, hey, I think my country can be a better place with freedom of press, with freedom of opinion, that women should be able to have rights. Women should be able to leave their home without the permission of a man. And these were the kind of things that he was saying. And at the same time, he was disagreeing with Trump's relationship with Mohammed bin Salman. And for this, he was murdered.
Let's explore our relationship with the Saudis, because, they were implicated quite heavily in 9/11. And there's been a lot of families, survivors of 9/11, have been trying to have lawsuits against the Saudi government and stuff like that. And our country is not helping that process at all. And I is it all oil? Is it all money? Like, what do we need them for? I guess is the question.
It's gotten further complicated in recent years. I think if you look back to the House of Saud, which is, the Saudi royal family, which is really Saudi Arabia is controlled by one family. And this family, it's an authoritarian, essentially dictatorship. This family controls the vast majority of wealth and resources in the country. And there was a time when Saudi Arabia was basically 50% of the world's oil supply was coming from Saudi. This is not the case anymore. And of course, as we change more and more over to renewable energies, and obviously Tesla's up, 10 or 20X this year, right? That there is less dependency. Of course, the United States is also producing a ton of oil, and other countries over the last couple decades have stepped forward with their own oil production. So we are nowhere as dependent as we think. I think the dependency relies more in the economic interests. You see, the United States is the world's biggest weapons manufacturer. And what most people don't realize is our single biggest export is weapons. That's what we make. That's what we sell. We think it's other things. It's weapons. And Saudi Arabia is the single biggest buyer of weapons from the United States. So this is where it lies. I think the oil obviously is a huge factor because it's basically the leading member of OPEC. They can control oil prices. And, as we saw with Trump during the administration, he was pressuring the Saudis to either raise oil prices or pressuring them to lower oil prices. And, what they did with Russia last year, where they, put a strangle on the market, because for the Saudis, they can basically produce oil for nothing. It doesn't cost them anything at this point, or costs them, less than any other country in the world. But I think that it's way beyond oil. I think it's really in the business interests, the investment interests. The world's largest hedge fund, SoftBank, is all Saudi money. The Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, which is the most liquid sovereign wealth fund in the world, which invests tens of billions of dollars in companies like Apple, is,
Saudi I agree. Money. Well, it has to be. It can't be oil anymore. We're pretty much independent over the last couple of years. And we get, well, I don't know about the Keystone Pipeline situation, but we were pretty independent. And that may come back with enough pressure. But it's not oil. It's now just other money. I will say, sidebar, it sounds like a joke. I'm not kidding. Speaking of Tesla is now a real car driven by real people, because when Tesla first came out, it was just a handful of celebrities who wanted to, you know, make a statement. When I was driving to work today, I pulled up next to a Tesla. Dude inside it was smoking. And I want to tell Elon Musk, that means you are now, you've arrived.
You have a crossover hit.
Right, because you would never find a smoker who bought a Tesla. This guy was flew in the face of everything. Now, if the day people smoke in Teslas is the day Teslas are accepted as regular cars. No more tree huggers hanging out with Leonardo DiCaprio. This is just way to get to work. So God bless Tesla and Elon Musk, a guy smoking.
I mean, the fact that you bring that up, I mean, I never even thought about that. But yes, I mean, the idea that you would smoke in a Tesla other than smoking weed or off your vape. Yeah, vape, I mean, that really is
game-changer.
The arrival of Tesla as mainstream.
I wonder if since they moved,
anybody can drive a Tesla.
That is right. Any Armenian in Glendale can drive a Tesla. I agree. Wait a minute, Brian had a question. Sorry, Gina, I jumped.
It's a follow up to what Brian was talking about, you know, weapons sort of replacing, or the just the idea that the Saudis are valuable to us in what they spend. One of the many things, Brian, I liked about the documentary, and like I said, it was a very good start to finish. One of the many things I liked was, So I remember when this happened, there was a lot of like, well, people, what's the response going to be? What's Trump going to do about this? Is he going to do anything about this? And of course, he didn't do anything. But you didn't belabor the point. You didn't have to. You know what I mean? There was just enough of Trump. At one point, Adam, he's holding up like a chart showing how much the Saudis spend, basically saying, I'm not going to pursue the very clear subtext being, I'm not going to pursue any action because look how valuable they are to us. Look how much they spend. And it's a referendum on how the world works. You can say, well, that sucks, but it's reality on reality's terms.
Well, this was something that, you know, Trump, love or hate him, I mean, this guy did better than anyone else, which was, hey, it's all about business. I mean, there was no bullshit in terms of, oh, I care about human rights. I give a shit that somebody just got murdered and hacked to pieces in a consulate. I mean, this is going to cost us billions of dollars. I'm going to take a pass on taking any action. And Brian, you know, you're 100% right. In the film, I didn't want to go down the Trump Kushner rabbit hole. That wasn't where I was going.
It was just
simply, hey, this is what happened. Oh, and by the way, both the House of Representatives and the Senate, bipartisan across the aisle, wanted to sanction the Saudis, wanted pass legislation to block weapon sales, pass legislations to try to punish, you know, for the Khashoggi murder, and Trump vetoed all of it. And just today, there's a story in the New York Times about the return of all these companies to Davos in the desert, which is Mohammed bin Salman's big investment initiative. Last week there was a story in the Washington Post about, you know, the Saudis trolling our film on the movie ratings websites. So, I mean, everything that is put forward, not only is real, I mean, you're watching it in real time. And, you know, and one of the main things that Biden has said as he's come into office is that he's planning to reassess the U.S.-Saudi relationship. And they have hired up, you know, tens, if not hundreds of lobbyists to try to prepare for what they think is going to be a real change in its relationship with the United States. And there's been a lot of press on this in the last week since Biden has taken office as to what is going to be with the U.S.-Saudi relationship, because Biden has been very forthright of holding Mohammed bin Salman accountable for this murder. He also tried to rendition Saudi living on U.S. soil to murder him. He sent agents into Canada to try to come to the U.S. I mean, it's really crazy dictator stuff.
I always say, what year is it? Like, I'm really surprised that, you know, 2021 and this shit is as old as civilization. I'm always naively surprised. If you would have got hold of me in 1987 and said in 2021, the same old shit is still going to be going down, I'd just be like, no, we're going to be one globe at that point. You know, we're going to have supersonic airplanes that get us from here to there in 10 minutes. We're all going to sort of join arms. It's crazy how deep this shit runs and how old it is. And it's like literally the mentality. I mean, the techniques are modernized and the technology is, but the mentality's hundreds and thousands of years old. And it's crazy that we're still there. Sorry.
No, I was going to say, what you're so right about this is, you know, I in the story of, you know, of Icarus and exposing this, you know, huge sporting fraud. I mean, here I went into a story thinking, oh, it's, you know, individual athletes cheating and the system is a fraud. I could have never imagined that, you know, an entire country, a nation state for decades had, you know, literally systematically cheated its way through every Olympic Games, every international competition, et cetera. And here again, coming into this story, what was so shocking to me is not only how barbaric this regime operates, but the concept that in this day and age, and I think we just keep taking this for granted in the United States, this idea of, oh yeah, we're safe. Oh yeah, we can send out a tweet saying we don't like this or we don't like that person, or we can send a tweet, you know, whatever, crooked Hillary and Trump should be arrested and whatever that is, and think that, hey, no big deal. And yet there are countless countries around the world, and here's Saudi Arabia in particular, one of the richest and most powerful, where literally voicing an opinion is enough to get you beheaded, let alone somebody sending a kill squad for you overseas to, you know, rendition and murder you. I mean, it's unbelievable. One of the things that we get into in the film is the story of Omar Abdulaziz, who's a 27-year-old Saudi activist living in self-exile in Montreal. He leaves his family when he's 19 years old. He goes to school in Montreal because Saudi Arabia has been paying for the last couple decades for its college kids to basically come over into Western schools to be educated, with the promise that if the government pays for their education, they'll come back to Saudi Arabia. So Omar comes to Montreal. He literally starts living with a Jewish family as an exchange student. So his mind is blown. You know, suddenly goes, oh, hey, these Jews aren't bad. And the next thing you know, he's, you know, learning about democracies. He's learning about freedom of speech. He's learning that you can voice an opinion. And he takes to Twitter. He starts, you know, basically voicing opinions on Twitter. And the next thing you know, he's at odds with Saudi Arabia. And they literally send a rendition team to Montreal to try to rendition Omar back to Saudi Arabia, where arguably he was going to be jailed. And when that fails, they arrest his two brothers, 23 of his friends, because they hacked his phone, torture his brothers. And here we are 2.5 years later, his brothers and his 23 friends are still sitting in a Saudi prison as basically pawns to try to get Omar to basically return to Saudi Arabia, where they'll jail him for the rest of his life for voicing an opinion. And this is happening right now. I mean, this is real.
Gina.
Well, first of all, I can't imagine the survivor's guilt that he must have about that. And it was an incredible documentary. As someone who's been, you know, following the story, there were so many questions that we still had, and I really want to thank you for answering those. But it's funny because, you know, we talk on one hand like it's barbaric, and, you know, they talk about getting a 70-pound order of meat to cover up the smell of burning flesh. And, you know, so it's to put it lightly and to be a little glib, it's still analog in many ways. But when it comes to Twitter And the online community, that's, I mean, between the Arab Spring and all of these things that couldn't have been done, I don't know how they would have been done without Twitter. I was wondering if you can speak a little bit about, I hope I'm remembering the hashtag right, what do you know about the bees?
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about
that? So, you know, this kind of goes back to the whole, Adam's comment of I can't believe it's 2021. Well, you know, part of what is happening, you know, this last, decade is, you know, the social media. The power of social media, we all know what it is right now. I mean, we had a president who, you know, basically ran his administration from Twitter. Our election was hacked, you know, with what Russia did on Facebook and Twitter and social media platforms. So, you know, here in Saudi Arabia, because you don't have free speech, because you don't have freedom of opinion, Twitter is essentially the parliament of the people. And in the United States, the infiltration of Twitter is something around 15-20%, like one in five people are on Twitter. In Saudi Arabia, it's 80%. 80% of the population is on Twitter. And the reason why is because, you know, you can basically have the VPN, you can create a name, you can be anybody you want on Twitter. You can create 20 accounts on Twitter, right? And you can basically then get access to what other people are tweeting, other people's opinion, or tweet out your own opinion. So what Saudi Arabia does as Mohammed bin Salman rises is they realize that basically the Arab Spring and all of these revolutions that have been happening in the Middle East have basically started on Twitter, basically started in these social media platforms, just like the BLM movement started, just like Me Too started on Twitter, right? And so they come up with a plan that they're going to hire thousands and thousands and thousands of people, Saudis, basically to create fake accounts on Twitter so that they can control the public narrative. So if anything comes up on Twitter, like whatever, I disagree with Mohammed bin Salman, the next thing you know, that person's Twitter account has like 7,000 posts on it. You're a traitor. You're a piece of scum. You don't know what you're talking about. Mohammed bin Salman is God. Mohammed bin Salman is the greatest thing since Wonder Bread. Mohammed bin Salman, you know, is bigger than Godzilla. It doesn't matter what this is. And they crush this person's thought or opinion in a second. At the same time, they're putting forward hashtags to go trend. So everything trending in Saudi Arabia is basically a government hashtag that they're planting through their trolls that then are retweeting and retweeting and retweeting, making the hashtag rise to the top. So what Omar Abdulaziz, this Saudi dissident, and Jamal Khashoggi start working on is basically a plan where they can basically fight fire with fire. So Omar gets Jamal to fund him some startup money to order thousands of SIM cards with Canadian and U.S. addresses. So it'll appear like it's coming from the United States or Canada. They disseminate all these SIM cards among Saudi youth, Saudi activists, those that, you know, want change in the country to start combating the flies. So as the flies are tweeting, the bees, which is the what do you know about the bees, which was the hashtag that they got trending to be number one in Saudi Arabia for a moment, literally a couple days right before they killed and murdered Jamal, was essentially showing that they could fight fire with fire. And it was this plan that Omar and Jamal were working on to basically take back control of the public sphere and of the public narrative to put forward what was really going on in the country, rather than simply what the kingdom wants you to know.
I got a final question for you, Brian. Philosophical, but I think we can all kind of join in on this one. So I was thinking about, you know, I can't believe it's 2021. We're still doing this. Any culture or any society that oppresses women or treats women cruelly or unfairly, is there any hope for them until that activity changes? Meaning women, I've always kind of said that when you live, you know, I'm 200 pounds, my wife's 125 pounds. If I wanted to use my fists, I could get my way. You know what I mean? Like men are bigger than women. they can physically do whatever they want, but we have figured out that that's not the answer. That's not the direction we want to go as a culture. It shouldn't matter on your size or your upper body strength. And it's also a bigger picture. Like if you micro or macro, like show me a guy, we'll go micro. Show me a guy who rules his wife or his daughters with an iron fist and is abusive and gives them no rights and makes a totally separate set of rules for his son than he would be for his daughter or himself than he would be. Could you ever really trust that guy? Could you ever really do business with that guy? Would you be scared that if you did business with that guy would just have you killed by a drifter and take all your money or collect the insurance? Like, is there any really... does that guy fit into society? And can a culture fit into the society as we know it, 2021, if in fact it's simultaneously oppressing women? Like, how could you be good in international affairs and business and oil and whatever else and oppress women? And I'm just wondering, maybe we should reverse engineer this. Maybe we should work on the oppression of the females in these cultures. And because you know, the day any culture says women are equal, they have equal rights, they have all the same rules and under the law and in societies as men have, the culture immediately evens out. I feel like those are much better cultures. So, or name me the culture that oppresses women and is a fantastic culture. Like, well, we love being neighbors to that culture. We love doing business with that culture. Like,
well, the Saudis would tell you that they're a fantastic culture.
That's what you ask.
Right.
Look, I mean, this is where I think when you look at actual change that can come. So there's a woman sitting in a Saudi prison right now. She's been there for 3 years, and she was just sentenced to another 6. Her name is Lujan Al-Hatoul. One of her brothers lives in Canada. The sister lives in Belgium. They have been fighting for her release. She was arrested 3 years ago, essentially for getting to Twitter and going that women, shouldn't be under the Guardian system. So in Saudi Arabia, if you're a woman, you cannot leave the home without the permission of an 18-year-old male in the house. So if your mother, right, wants to leave the house, she needs the permission from her 18-year-old son to be able to leave the house. Literally. So Lu Zhang, you know, was basically writing and tweeting about this. She was also suggesting that when they leave her house, should not have to be covered head to toe in a burqa where you could only basically see their eyes, and that, you know, women should be able to wear, you know, clothing that they want to wear. For this, she was arrested, spent 3 years in a prison, tortured. And then just a couple weeks ago at her trial, they found her guilty of all these crimes and sentenced her to another 6 years in prison. This is all the same time while Mohammed bin Salman is out there going, I'm a great reformer. Please take my money. Please take my investment.
I'll give you a concert. It'll look
and I'll give you a concert. Right. So if he can get Nicki Minaj there, if he can get Drake there, if he can get stars there, or he can get Jason Momoa to come to Saudi Arabia and pay him $1 million for a photo op, which he did, right? Then all of a sudden that whitewashes everything because, oh, hey, check it out. Here's Jason Momoa. He's in Saudi Arabia. Here's Nicki Minaj. She's in Saudi Arabia. And so this is what he's been doing. The same thing with Formula One racing. Right. While you have thousands and thousands of people sitting in a jail, you know, without charges on human rights abuses for, you know, for doing something as innocently as saying that women should have rights. So I think, Adam, that, you know, it has to come from this place, you know, and this is something where the Biden administration could possibly have a huge impact in, which is what we see over and over again, is that the greed element of all this prohibits governments, members of the G20, or businesses or corporations from basically standing up to human rights, right? I mean, they just go, well, you know, if you're Apple, you're going, hey, I'm selling $3 billion or $4 billion a year of product in Saudi Arabia. We're not going to, you know, we're not going to put embargoes on our goods or boycott our goods because we sell them there.
Well, yeah, you know, look at China, obviously.
Right. China, exactly. So it takes a bigger picture there. And the way that we know is leverage, financial leverage, just as, you know, their financial leverage is what is, you know, allowing so much of this to happen. Financial leverage on the other side, I think, would actually change the narrative. It's a question of, you know, when that comes. And as we know, in the Arab Spring or Me Too or BLM movement or all these other social movements, is it has to start with the people. We can't rely on the government or corporations to do the right thing. So the people have got to rise up. And in a place like Saudi Arabia, that is very difficult to do. I mean, just the images out of Russia over the last few days, you know, it's hard to fathom that, you know, that Russia won't, you know, literally arrest this guy as he goes back to soil, knowing that there's, you know, millions and millions of people in the country that like him and they don't care. And this is authoritarian rule dictatorships. So it's complicated.
We talk Very about a, Adam talks about a micro version, you know, of the thing. The example you're talking about is towards the end of the film, Jamal's now widowed fiance. I don't know if that's how you say it, but the now fiance, yeah, whose man is dead, goes to the United Nations to speak about her experience and talk about what happened. Who gets up and walks out during her speech? The Saudis,
right? And again, Chris can look it up, but there's a lot of 9/11 Saudi implications that, oh, yeah, again, we're not that interested in looking into. Yeah, look, the problem is, you know, human foible and large and small. You know, Nicki Minaj and Jason Momoa. Is it Momoa?
Momoa.
Look, they're going to take a check. They're going to get on an airplane. And so is... so is the U.S. government, and so is Apple, and so is Nike, and so is the NBA. Like, that's what they do. And hoping that they do the right thing is kind of, it's almost naive. You know what I mean? They're not people, companies, entities, celebrities. They're not usually in the habit of turning their back on, you know, tons and tons of dollars. That's how they became who they are. The reason we know who Apple is because Apple's in the business of making money, and they've, you know, they're not. Now, it's funny. I always say, look out for the good vibes commercials, because nobody does more good vibes commercials than Apple, which I always look at as like Ellen dancing at the beginning of her talk show. Like, well, why are they doing that? I will say, I don't know if you're allowed to drive as a female in Saudi Arabia. Probably not.
So this is Mohammed bin Salman. So one of his big reforms was women are now allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia.
That's nice.
This is a new thing over the last couple of years. Yet Lujan al-Hatoul, the woman who was basically pressuring him to let women drive in Saudi Arabia, sits in a prison because she was pressuring him to allow women to drive, and it wasn't and he needed it to be his idea, not Lujan's. And I don't know what restrictions there are on women driving, if there's still a curfew or not, or how that works. I mean, I'm sure we could look that up. But that has been a good progression.
Well, I don't know.
Women actually can't drive.
I don't know if they make you drive with the burqa, but that is goddamn dangerous. Oh. Like, I don't know. You better be on your mirrors, because you got no peripheral at all in that bad boy. I keep wanting to say Descendant because of that stupid Clooney movie. The Dissident, it's available now on Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, and video on demand as well. And thedissident.com is where you go to the website. Twitter, by the way, at Brian with a Y, Brian Fogle as well. Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks. I've been posting a bunch of stuff on my Instagram handle, which is @BrianFogel. And you know, if your listeners, if any of them loved Icarus, I promise you, you'll really like The Dissident. We crafted the film as a real cinematic thriller. It feels like a very big film, but it's all true and it's real, and hoping that the film will bring about change. Just to clarify, it's available for rent on VOD. So it's not on, you know, the streamers, but you can rent it from Amazon and iTunes, you know, Apple Movie and cable providers, etc. So hoping a lot of you will see it. Thank you, Adam.
Please go out and check it. And whenever you have your next project or just want to chat, come back on the show, Brian.
Would love to.
Appreciate it. Brian Fogel. All right, we'll take a quick break. Come back with Gina Grad and the news.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff based on DMC. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Real quick, something that the Jason Momoa and the Nicki Minaj thing reminded me of, Adam. I know it's not even remotely on the same scale, and I would imagine it would be a lot more looking inward had it been millions of dollars. But a long time ago, someone reached out to me to see if I'd be interested in a free trip to Lebanon on like a Goodwill tour, and all this amazing stuff and all these incredible places, and we'd be, you know, taken personally. And it really, I really didn't have to think very long about saying no. And they knew I wanted to travel, and it would have been first class everything. And I just couldn't make it good with me, you know, a Jewish chick to go to Lebanon and glad hand and say it's awesome here and everybody should visit. It just didn't, I couldn't do it.
Where did they discover you? Was it doing the soundtrack for the Golden Girls mockumentary porn, or where did
yes,
they find you?
That's exactly right. They're really into sitcom.
You know her from.
Yeah.
It wasn't around that time though.
You know, it's sad because these regimes have so much money, and you know, when they tell whomever celebrity, we'll give you $1 million or $5 million and we'll fly you out first class and all you have to do is appear and blah blah blah, like, you know, we can do all the judging we want, but how many amongst us would just go, thanks, keep your money, no thanks, you know, like, well, who do you really know?
Sounds great.
And right. the way they're treated, why wouldn't Nicki Minaj come back and go, you know, it's really not that bad. It's actually kind of awesome. And now that's what the world thinks women are treated like in Saudi Arabia.
That's why I always felt bad for Dennis Rodman vis-a-vis like North Korea. Like to him, he's a fucking dullard. To him, he probably thinks it's the greatest place in the world. They treat everyone like kings. Yeah. They let you do it. I was like, you're fucking Dennis Rodman and the guy's obsessed with you.
Right.
Well, if I might filibuster for just one more second, and I really appreciate Adam just letting me get this out really quick. You know how a couple times a year I let you guys know that I'm involved in this awesome charity group called Art of Elysium, and they work with the Children's Hospital in Los Angeles, and I host these big events for the kids. They're all from the maxillofacial ward, so they've all had some sort of facial scarring for one reason or another, and we do these big graduation events for them, and I've been involved with it for a million years.
Have we cured this by now?
I don't know that it's curable, Brian, but thanks. You know what? Whatever, but a lot of times, truly, whatever they went in for has been cured, but it's left them with some scarring. Mm-hmm. So the group Art of Elysium is doing this awesome thing because they've been around for 23 years. So for $23, you can just donate to this thing called Pledgling. It's at the top of my Twitter. You don't have to be on Twitter to go to me. Twitter.com/GinaGrad. It's pinned to the top. If you donate $23 to that link, you will get 9 prints that are amazing artists. 3 from Shepard Fairey, 3 from Cole Sternberg, 3 from the name escapes me. But there are 9 pieces. You can print them. You can frame them. You can put them on a mug. Do whatever you want with them. Post them on social media. They're yours. And they were all donated by Shepherd Fairey and these amazing, amazing artists. I work really closely with them. I have for 1,000,000 years because I believe in what they do. They're incredible. And my friend, Richard Chang, who is just a friend and been a listener for a long time and just love him to death, he said for the next 24 hours as this airs, he'll match any donation up to $1,000.
Wow.
So if you donate $23, that'll be $46, or $5 will be $10, whatever you want. Please go to twitter.com/GinaGrad. Hit the pledge link button, donate there. Let me know so I can personally thank you. And it will be doubled for the next day and a half. So thanks for that.
Thank you, Gina Grad. The $23 in the 23rd year is good now. But when they were trying to 6 months in for their, one of their earliest pledge drives, 50 cents. Yeah. 50 cents will get you a $40 coffee mug. If you,
that's right.
Yeah, that was a money loser.
That's right. Why they're having to make up for it now.
Yes. All right. So what do you got, Gina?
So we talked a little bit about with Brian Fogel things that may or may not be reversed with the new president here. Well, one thing that is going away is President Joe Biden did sign an executive order that will lift the Pentagon's ban on transgender people serving in the military. So first Obama lifted it, then Trump unlifted it. Now it's being lifted again. Biden has directed Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to prohibit discrimination against troops based on their gender identity. According to the Department of Defense, there are thousands of transgender troops serving in the military.
Really?
Had no idea.
No, I feel like that's, I'm trying to figure out what percentage of society, our society, is transgender. I mean, it's obviously way less than 1%. I mean, yeah. But I guess you could still get to thousands with way less than 1%.
Well, is that the self-selecting group that somehow finds their way into the military?
Well, let's see if we can figure this out. Most transgendered these days are women going to men. Right?
Is that true? I don't know.
I don't know about that. Yeah.
I don't know what the stats are on that, but I'm curious.
Well, there's an interesting. Yes. So it, in the beginning, it used to be men cross-dressing or men becoming women or men wanting to be women. Lately, it's been many more women going over to the male side. Remember we were talking about that story X amount of months ago where some, I was telling you that Drew was talking to some sociologist or somebody like that who was thinking or who posited that a lot of heavy exposure to hardcore porn may have also been steering it this way. Like, I don't want to be underneath Ron Jeremy. You know what I mean? I don't know anyone who does. Maybe his cellmate now. So I think there's more traffic going from the women to the men department. In the past, it was probably more from the men to the women. And I would just guess that. And then you go to the Army, you get a cool uniform. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
what's
more manly than boots and tight dungarees and one of those weird belts that has no holes in it for some reason?
Right.
I don't know why. But whenever they did the uniform decree on the military uniforms, like, we can have belts, but no loops. Understand? But one smooth strap with some weird system where you slide it and you cinch it, and then there's a weird camber. There's a weird locking mechanism, and then someone went, well, people had belts with holes in them for the last several hundred years. No!
Not in this man's army.
Not in this man's army. We need them to be like weird ratchet straps where you hold down your gardening equipment in the back of your pickup truck. Like, we need them to be like tie-downs. They're really not belts. We call them waist tie-downs, shirt tie-downs. No holes in belts. And then everyone's like, but I don't get it. It'll ruin the aesthetic of the entire outfit. We can't have that.
It's not for you to get, son.
Yeah, that's right. Yours is not to ask why.
That's
remember,
pay grade.
You know what's weird is I was thinking about as I was thinking about getting haircuts today and all that kind of stuff. every movie officer and a gentleman was this way. Every 70s and 80s movie always started with the haircut and basic training because you think about it. When they were recruiting, like you take like Full Metal Jacket or something like that, when you're taking people off of college campuses or out of society in 1969 and bringing them into this man's army, you're going from super long Keith Partridge hair to shorn like a sheep. Wouldn't make a difference in today's Patrick Mahomes State Farm commercial. Like, we just, you know, so what? You get your hair buzzed. You may walk in that way.
Brian's ready to go.
I'm ready for basic training.
All right, good. We've opened up the military.
So this is a little bit long, but I think worth it because we have another Army Hammer update. Mm. I did not care about this story, and now I do. Well,
I only cared about it because he doth protest too much.
Yes, and we have some bizarre stories coming out now. I mean, not just like, you know, whatever. They're more specific. So for the past two weeks.
He dropped out of a big movie because someone wrote some weird texts that weren't, or tweets that weren't true. Or something. Like, why did you drop out of a movie in that case? Yeah. But yes, here we go.
So for the past 2 weeks, various women have come forward with claims about him and his personal life, while his main unnamed accuser has claimed that more than 200 women have contacted her regarding similar relationships with Army Hammer. Since then, two more of his former girlfriends have publicly come forward to share their stories. Now, check this out. Here's the two of them. App creator Courtney Vucikovic, she dated Hammer from June to October of last year, according to Page Six. She said she wouldn't be surprised if the screenshots were legitimate. She said, "He said to me he wants to break my rib and barbecue and eat it." The claims all share another common theme, which is Hammer allegedly exhibited grooming and other emotionally abusive behavior toward all the women the same way. Meanwhile, in January, the interview with Star Magazine model Paige Lorenz, she made similar claims about Hammer. They dated right after, from October to December, just a few months ago, right after Vucikovic. So Lorenz says, quote, "He said he wanted to find a doctor that would remove my ribs. He was telling me you can remove the bottom ribs so you could smoke them, cook them, and eat them. He kept saying, you don't need them." But she said it just wasn't all talk. Lorenz claimed that he carved the letter A into her skin using a knife, which was very painful, and that Hammer made a big deal about it. Now, of course, he's being very quiet about this. He's been married for 10 years to Elizabeth Chambers. They're going through a divorce. He's saying this is all bullshit, but yes, he is stepping away from a major film with J-Lo right now. Both women said he wanted to cut my ribs out and eat them.
Well, hold on. Was he doing the A in order to sort of mark her as his territory, or was he trying to get her to pledge a black fraternity? Because those...
You know what? I have not done my due diligence.
Wait, option C, like branding a steak.
Mm-hmm.
That he could get down
with. That actually adds up.
Yeah. Now, I guess we'll know if this is true or not by whether he enters rehab, right?
Yes.
Yeah, voluntarily. Yeah.
Mea culpa.
Because if you enter rehab.
Preemptively, sure.
Yeah.
Kind of a weird thing. There's this rib thing.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to tell. Is it goofy, weird, jokey stuff?
Yeah, like, is that like Prince Charles, like wanting to be the tampon or whatever? Like, I don't think he actually wants to physically transform into a tampon, but he's a horny dude.
Well, my grandfather used to say, you can break the world down into two parts. Son, you want to be the tampon, you want to be the string. And I've always said, I want to be the string, Pappy. And
sounds better in the original Hungarian. I get the idea.
There was some hammer nail one, too, that he would use, but I forgot about that one.
Yeah, sometimes you're the bug, sometimes you're the windshield. Yeah. Same thing.
Right. But you want to be the string, not the tampon. Could be some sort of weird thing. On the other hand, I hate to get too judgmental here, but he's a real blue blood who comes from wealth, major wealth with the Arm and Hammer, right? Like, this doesn't feel like new money to me.
No,
this feels like old money.
It's funny. Armand Hammer, not the brand Arm and Hammer, but it is Armand Hammer was his great grandfather, the oil tycoon.
Right.
Who had nothing to do with the product?
I don't think so.
Oh.
I don't know that they're related, are they?
I don't know. I can no longer.
But his name is Armand Hammer.
Yeah. I think it is from that. But either way, he comes from a lot of long, rich bloodline.
Yes.
Right. And this does feel a little like that kind of thing, that kind of weird rich guy stuff. Arm and Hammer, not related to Armin. Yeah, Arm and Hammer, but still comes from a bunch of money.
Robert Kraft, not related to Kraft cheese.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Bizarre.
Yeah, I think he's the Gillette guy, right? I mean, he's the razor guy? Or am I now
Kraft?
Swimming in that?
Let me just go over.
We're getting out in the weeds.
Bob Kraft, yeah. Who the hell's the who's the Gillette razor guy? It's Gillette Stadium.
It's Mr. Gillette.
Oh.
The guy bought the.
I don't know about that.
Who was the guy who bought the company? He used to do that commercial. I liked it so much, I bought the company.
Oh yeah.
He looked like Bob Kraft, but that guy's got to be too old by now. All right, we'll figure out where did Bob Kraft make his bones. Max Pattis on a chase.
We just talked about this.
Yeah.
Manufacturing or something.
So you think that it's more likely in theory that he would be creepy because he's old money?
I am something, saying
like his pleasure centers have been so blown out he has to go to smoking human ribs.
I am saying that, you know, I've always told you the guys that are going out to the dominatrix and all this stuff, these are rich whitey. You know what I mean? The regular folk. New money, they want to get laid. You know what I mean? Like they may be into a little
old fashioned.
They may be in a little like let me smell your feet, but by and large, this feels like a weird old thing to me. That's all.
Yeah.
Well, plus in a world where we have baby back ribs, who wants human ribs?
I don't know. Also, sometimes guys have a rap that they think is funny and they'll use it on every yes. woman, and it they should learn their lesson that it's not, but no. Maybe this is part of this sort of weird rap. Where'd Bob Kraft make his bones, Maxipata?
It started off at a packaging company and then trading physical paper commodities.
Yeah. So then, nowhere
yeah,
exciting.
Yeah, just yeah, it's not
nothing
exciting.
Sexy.
Is he happy?
Physical paper commodities.
Is he rooting for Tom Brady?
I bet he is.
You think he wants him to win the Super Bowl?
Well, it's not against his team. Yeah, I bet he does.
I don't know. I feel like these guys, these captains of industry guys, are pretty competitive.
They hold a grudge.
Well, Belichick's not rooting for a victory, is he?
I would say less likely.
And is Bob Kraft, is he? It doesn't tarnish his legacy at the Patriots, but it doesn't help.
Were they close? Like, oh, I thought Bob Kraft was like a father to me, like Tom Brady and him.
Yeah,
there are,
but I feel like my dad hopes the worst happens to me, and we're father and son. It can exist.
Actual father and son.
Yes, right. Awesome. It can exist. I don't know if you got Bob Kraft really drunk. I'll put this poll out there. You people can tweet me if we got Bob Kraft really fucking drunk and asked him if he'd like Brady to win the Super Bowl. Would he say, I don't want to see him get hurt. I'd like him to have a good day, but I don't really want him to win. Or would he just go, I hope he wins by 40 points. Do you think he'd have no feelings about it?
I think when he gets to be that rich, you don't care about, I don't know. I think you don't care about the minutia of who wins and loses a game you're not in. Like
you're that rich. What do you have but spite?
Well, he's definitely rooting. He's going to be rooting one way or the other. He's going to have a team that he wants to win. Does he want to see Brady win a Super? Does he want him to win a Super Bowl outside of a Patriot uniform?
Is there a world where Brady winning makes Belichick look bad, but Kraft look better?
Well, kind of. But here's the thing: you have to picture this too. He wins. He's at his 10th Super Bowl, first time in 54 Super Bowls. They played one at, or 55, where they, 54 or whatever. They played it, you know, where the home team has been the home stadium. And maybe, just maybe, if he wins that Super Bowl, many of the pictures that are up in Canton are him in a Bucks uniform, like celebrating or whatever. Now,
that would be bold.
Robert's got to kind of contend with, do you want pictures of Brady in a Bucks uniform hosting, you know, hoisting the Lombardi above his head with the ticker tape falling down? Like, I bet he doesn't want that image out there.
Right, because if it's Y.A. Tittle, you know, you don't think of him in the Niners. Or you know what I mean? Like, if it's Joe Namath, you'll think of him in the Rams uniform, you know.
Right.
Like, because he's kind of ended with a whimper.
So far, every picture of Brady winning a Super Bowl is obviously in Kraft's uniform. All right, let's do Arm & Hammer served on the board.
Arm & Hammer would get asked so many times if he was related to Arm & Hammer, the baking soda, that he eventually just bought a bunch of shares and owned the company for the last few years because he was just, he just got asked so many times.
As a joke, he bought a company.
Yes.
It's like Schitt's Creek. He bought a town because the name sounded funny.
All right, let's do one more, Gina Grass.
All right. Well, since we're talking about the Super Bowl, and I'm sure Christy will have more knowledge on this, Super Bowl viewers tuning in for the commercials won't be seeing the Clydesdales this year. Budweiser announced that it will not advertise because the game on February 7th, The beer brand will skip the game for the first time in 37 years, citing financial uncertainty due to the pandemic. Instead, the company plans to spend the money throughout the year on ad council campaigns to raise awareness about the COVID-19 vaccine.
Bud Light,
though, will run an ad during the game. Other unusual advertisers, Coke, Pepsi, Hyundai, also announced they will be taking the year off. Although Pepsi is sponsoring the Super Bowl halftime show, and CBS is charging $5.5 million for a 30-second spot, but they're without some of their big heavy hitters.
All right, two things, Adam. So I'm gonna jump in here. Number one, this is the year to get in on the Super Bowl, break the bank, because number one, I don't know how they estimate the audience because so many people have Super Bowl parties. Like, there must be an average of 18 people watching every television. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, some average they must figure out. This is the year people are going to be at home watching their own TVs, so the numbers may be up. Number two, people are going to be home, not at parties, paying attention to the commercials for the first, like, I imagine half the people just don't get the nuances of the commercial because they're talking and they're at a party and blah,
blah,
blah.
Get more chili dip.
This is the year you're watching the game. You're watching the commercials. Like, this is the year to go in.
Yeah, you can't even really hear the sound at a lot of Super Bowl parties of the commercials. And, yes, there is no, you know, recollection of these things. Yeah, it's always weird when some big company like Budweiser says, we're not going to do this. We feel like we'd rather focus on some civic help, you know, to give more awareness. I'm always like, all right, what's going on?
Yeah,
what's the real reason? What's the rub? You're not, you're Budweiser. You're not doing this because you're community oriented. There's something going on. I'm kind of with you in that, like, when you start seeing commercials at the Super Bowl for, like, website builder apps and stuff like that, it feels very it's like, Brian will back me up, you want to see the Yankees play the Dodgers in the World Series, you know, you don't want the Marlins playing the Toronto expansion team or something. It's a very kind of I want the old school Budweiser, the Coca-Cola, Ford, you know, I like those, even when, like, the Hyundais would come up, or, like I said, the bizarre web browser thing that I didn't understand. It always felt weird to me. Like, it felt like the game had passed me by.
And you can earn your way into that group. You know what I mean? Like, if you're Doritos, now we all look forward to the Doritos commercials. They're always interesting or fun or whatever. But the legacy brands are the ones that make it go.
Well, the good news is there will be more room for Puppy Monkey Baby, which I think was Mountain Dew, yes?
Yes.
I'm so glad that didn't become a thing.
Oh my God. It was so weirdly, insanely off-putting. I still cannot wrap my mind around that. All right, let's bring it home at Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad! That was the news with Gina Grad.
Oklahoma City Bricktown Comedy Club, February 26th, 27th, would be doing live podcasts there and then stand-up there as well. And then Kansas City, Missouri, Arvest Bank Theater, March 25th, do straight stand-up there. And then Royal Oak, Michigan, Royal Oak Music Theater, that'll be March 26th. And go to amcroll.com for all the live shows. If you like, today's Paul Newman's birthday, winning the Racing Life of Paul Newman. You can watch it for free on demand on Pluto TV.
And Adam,
as well,
you need to be careful because it's going to be major Yenta Fest in Kansas City with all those women getting the vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
That's right.
You're going to have a whole Jewish mother contingency.
Bring them on, I tell you. All right. I want to thank Brian Fogel. The dissident is, yes, the dissident.
It.
Yeah, I'm up in my head. And Dave Damashek, -3 as well. And until next time, it's Adam for Brian and Brian and Gina and Bald and Dave saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on the Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla and the thumbs up there on Facebook. And you can also catch him on Instagram at Adam Carolla. Leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and tell us what's on your mind. And pick up Adam's new book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It is available everywhere, and it is awesome. Get all the links at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.